Music ministry. Amen. They weren't able to rehearse this week because power was out, and so they had to scramble today to try to get in a rehearsal before worship today, and I want to thank them for their service and ministry. Also, I'm told that there will be a memorial service for Norman Scales on Saturday, February 11th at King Tears at what time? From 2 to 3. Is it at 3 or 2? Okay, we'll check on it. That's the father of our usher, Norman Scales Jr., so be in prayer for that family. As I said, the power was out here at the church all week. It didn't come on until Friday night, and we weren't sure whether we would be able to have worship in person, and Reverend Spears and I were preparing for that eventuality, but God blessed us. I want to thank our church secretary, Sharon Owens. She came in yesterday to do the bulletins. I want to thank Kanika Pendergrass and Rhea Griffin and Reverend Spears. We were all here most of the day yesterday trying to get everything ready for today. So give them a hand. I want to read from the Gospel of John, chapter 8, verse 2 through verse 11 from the New International Version. And the text says, "At dawn, he appeared again in the temple courts, where all the people gathered around him, and he sat down to teach them. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in a woman caught in adultery. They made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, 'Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say?' They were using this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing him. But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, 'Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her.' Again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left. With the woman still standing there, Jesus straightened up and asked her, 'Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?' 'No one, sir,' she said. 'Then neither do I condemn you,' Jesus declared. 'Go now and leave your life of sin.'" The word of the Lord. Going public. It's the title of my message. It's hard for me to feel any sympathy for Congressman Santos. His story is so incredible. It seems like we're watching a reality TV show. He tells one lie after another, bold lies, from embellishing his educational background, to lying about his employment history, to claiming Jewish heritage. The lies go on and on. And when we think we've heard it all, another story is presented. It's hard to feel sympathy for him. Of course, no one wants to have their dirty laundry aired in public. But Santos chose public life. Knowing everything about his life and background, he chose to enter the public arena. This isn't on my paper, but there's a lesson there. If your life is messed up, you better stay in the background. Were it not for his choice, we would know nothing about him. Santos is the kind of narcissistic personality that thinks he can get away with anything. He chose to go public with his ambitions, and life came back to bite him. Not everyone chooses to go public with their business. Most of us don't want our private lives and proclivities to be made public. Sometimes we don't choose to go public. Sometimes other people make that choice for us, whether out of anger or for revenge or just for sport or to use a person as a pawn. Sometimes people make public our mistakes, our shortcomings, and our sin. And you have to be careful today. There are cameras everywhere. Folk are filming, and they're filming you and me. Folk are taking pictures, and folk are recording conversations. And they might decide to go public with our business. And that's what occurs in our text in the Gospel of John. This story in John takes place at the temple in Jerusalem. Jesus has drawn a crowd, a huge crowd. He sits down to teach the crowd, but then he is confronted by the scribes and the Pharisees. They interrupt his teaching to put Jesus to the test. Let's look at the story more closely. The story involves a clandestine affair. Might be clandestine. The text says the teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in a woman caught in adultery. They made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say?" So it's about an affair. The woman has been caught in adultery. She is perhaps a married woman. She is, and if married, she is considered the property of her husband. And she is having an affair, perhaps, with a married man. And the Pharisees have condemned her to die. She has been brought outside for the stoning. That was pretty typical. If someone was convicted or condemned, they would be brought outside and it would be public so everybody could witness what happened. They lead this woman to her execution and they stand her before Jesus as a condemned person. I tell you, some folks don't mind going public with your mistakes and your sin. Some folks don't mind putting you on blast. Some folks don't mind telling your business. They won't tell theirs, but they will tell yours. Some folks are quick to cause embarrassment for others. You have people who can't wait to catch you in something or find out something so they can go out and make you look bad at work, in the neighborhood, in the church, or wherever. This affair goes public because these people bring her to Jesus. I'm sure the woman doesn't make her sin public. I'm sure she has tried to hide her sin, but The Pharisees and the scribes have made her sin a public event. They bring her to the temple. They bring her before the people. They bring her to Jesus. This affair goes public. The woman has sinned now, according to them, and her sin has gone public. Sometimes when you sow the wrong seed, you reap the wrong harvest. You can't go out there sowing the wrong seed and then come to church praying for God to give you a different harvest. Help me, somebody. We have recently witnessed something similar. Two married GMA anchors were having an affair. And through their own actions or the actions of others, their affair went public. Perhaps the thrill of the affair made them a bit too brazen. Sometimes it's so thrilling that these public displays of affection take place everywhere. And you forget where you are. You forget you're standing in the lobby at the church. You forget the cameras are on. You forget that you're on the parking lot. You forget you're in the neighborhood. It's so thrilling, huh? It makes you brazen. Perhaps eyewitnesses discover the affair and they spread the news. Those anchors didn't get stoned, but they lost their jobs because of the affair. So it's about a clandestine affair, could be clandestine. But the story is also about a public humiliation. Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery in the law. Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say? They were using, the narrator says, this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing him. When we read the comments of the narrator, we get a sense of the real motive of the Pharisees. Again, the narrator says they were using this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing him. So are the Pharisees seeking justice? Or is this just a stunt? Since they know the law, they're experts in the law, they don't have to bring the woman to Jesus. They can simply proceed with the stoning. But this is a public humiliation. And the public humiliation is twofold. The Pharisees want to humiliate this woman and then use her as a pawn to humiliate Jesus. They are not concerned about justice for the woman's husband, because to have relations with a married woman is a property violation in Jesus' day, because women were property, considered property in Jesus' day. So the woman's husband is the wronged party. And when the Pharisees ask Jesus about the Mosaic law, this is what the law says, but what do you say? They are not trying to resolve a legal issue. The humiliation of this woman is a smokescreen to get at their real target, Jesus. Come on, somebody. Sometimes folk come up to you. This isn't on my paper, just dropped in my spirit. They come up to you with a question. It isn't just about the question. They got another motive lurking in the background. Listen to what you see. The Pharisees don't bring any witnesses, which is required. They don't bring the man, which is required. The Mishnah indicates that only the man's punishment is to be by stoning, according to the Jewish Mishnah. The man's punishment is to be by stoning. So the Pharisees' question isn't about justice at all. The question is about humiliation. If Jesus says yes to them, then he is in defiance of Roman authority, because the Romans had the control and the right to have executions. If Jesus says no, don't stone her, then he loses popularity with his own people, the Jews. This is a stunt to humiliate both the woman and Jesus. And sadly, beloved, there are a lot of stunt seekers out there. A lot of folk will use you as a pawn to get back at somebody else. Sometimes you're drawn into something. You don't know that you're drawn into it until you get in the middle of it and you realize the knucklehead that led you to it has put you in the middle of some mess and they're trying to do something else. They will expose you and go public with your business if it helps them with their own agenda. So let me drop this off parenthetically. If you got business you don't want folk to know, don't tell anybody. So that's my best friend. You know, she won't turn her back. That's my best friend. He won't. Don't tell anybody. If you don't want somebody to know, keep it to yourself. Because somebody might decide one day when they get angry with you, I'm going to tell what you told me. It's a stunt. Public humiliation. The funeral for Tyre Nichols was held this past week. I could only watch parts of it because the characters there disturbed me. But I didn't realize I was the only person disturbed by some of those characters there. One athlete witnessing the funeral was critical about what he considered to be stunt seekers. That's not what he called them. He saw some of the folk as opportunists, taking advantage of the family's pain for personal gain and popularity. And I agree. When I read, I say, yeah. Some folks are ambulance chasers. They don't care about you. They come on the scene for a paycheck and for a publicity stunt. They don't fly into town because they are so compassionate. They fly into town because they want to get in the photo and they want to have pictures taken. It's a publicity stunt. They use your tragedy as a launching pad to gain glory for themselves. Some folks want you to be embarrassed, and they will use whomever they can to make that embarrassment occur. So this clandestine affair leads to this public humiliation twofold. Humiliation of this woman as a pawn and the humiliation of Jesus. But then you have in this story Jesus' powerful response. The text says, but Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. And when they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. Again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left. With the woman still standing there, Jesus straightened up and asked her, woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? No one, sir. She said, then neither do I condemn you, Jesus declared. Go now and leave your life of sin. I guess Jesus becomes so bothered by the extent of the Pharisees' machinations, he starts writing on the ground and ignores them. Sometimes you can smell mess when it shows up. He looks up at those fellas and says, this is a bunch of mess. This is a bunch of mess. Just writes on the ground. The Pharisees press him, and Jesus responds, and there are two parts to his response. Both parts are powerful. The first part, Jesus says, let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. So Jesus doesn't tell them what to do, and he doesn't tell them what not to do. He provides instead a principle for condemning others. And here is the principle. Our past sin should inform our present action. Those are not my words. Those are the words of a scholar I referenced. Our past sin should inform our present action. In other words, how the Pharisees have lived should govern how they condemn. Wow. So he says, look at your own lives and look at how you've lived before you condemn somebody else for how they have lived. Ah, and Jesus is right on point, because one by one, the accusers leave. And some have suggested that these men might have been former paramours of this woman. That's what some have suggested. And that they know about her adultery because they have committed adultery with the woman. How did they get so close to her? Where were they? Were they in the closet? Were they under the bed? Were they on the back porch? Where were they? And the other thing that's instructive is none of the Pharisees mentioned their own sin. None of them detail the sin in their own lives. The stone throwers realize that they too have sinned. Let me tell you something. Folk will make it seem like you're the one who is wrong when they, and that they have done nothing wrong. When your friends come tell you about somebody that they mad at or did something to them, the first question you should ask your friend and your family is, what did you do? Because sometimes they'll tell what the other person did and why the other person made them mad, but they won't say what they did. And sometimes they will modify what they did to get their friends to back them up. They will tell what you did, but don't admit what they did. They will even lie about what they did to make what you did seem worse. So there are many sides to every story. Many sides. And Jesus' principle is past sin should inform present action. If we're going to condemn someone, our hands must be clean. That's the first part. That's the first part of Jesus' response. It is powerful. Stop talking about folk. Stop talking about how bad they are when you've got dirt on your hands as well. And then Jesus launches into this private moment of grace with this woman. The text says, at this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left with the woman still standing there. Jesus straightened up and asked her, woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? No one, sir, she said. Then neither do I condemn you. Go now and leave your life of sin. He addresses the woman personally. And it's the first time that she has been addressed in the story. Before this, the woman has just been an object of men's desires, an object of men's scorn, an object of men's wicked scheme. She has no rights and no say in what happens. They drag this woman out like an object. But Jesus speaks to her. Jesus addresses her, and then he extends grace. He says, then neither do I condemn you. Go now and leave your life of sin. Look at this. It's not on my paper. But look at this. If Jesus is God, the God who was in the beginning with God, who created the heavens and the earth, if Jesus is God, then Jesus is the God who brought the commandments. He is the God who sent the prophets. And Jesus, as God, says to this woman, neither do I condemn you. Leave your life of sin. I tell you, if God says it's over with, if God says I don't condemn you, who are we to go around trying to act like we're God? Is Jesus ignoring sin? Is Jesus practicing loose morality? Some of us are morality chasers. Is Jesus defying the legal demands for justice? No, Jesus doesn't ignore the sin. He simply pronounces an acquittal. He decides that the motives of the Pharisees are not to do God's will, but to humiliate this woman and himself. And he said, this is what it's called for in this situation, some grace. So when you're standing in the scorner's seat, sitting in the seat of the scornful, when you're standing in the seat criticizing somebody else, somebody ought to say, this is the time when grace is called for. And his act of grace frees this woman to live a new life. He says, leave now and begin a new life. You cannot begin a new life unless you've been freed from the bondage of sin. So he releases the woman to live a righteous life. Those Pharisees knew all about the law, but they didn't know how to set her free. They knew all about the commandments, but they didn't know how to break the bonds of sin in her life. And Jesus says, you're acquitted, free to live a new life. What a response from Jesus. I tell you, he knows how to handle sin and shame. He knows how to extend grace. He knows the real essence of justice and grace. He knows that grace is something we do not deserve. If we deserved it, we didn't. It's not grace. Grace is something we don't expect. Grace is the only thing that frees us to live a brand new life. Thank God for grace. Grace to this woman. Go on and live your new life free of sin. Going public can be a negative experience. When you choose to put your life out there and things backfire on you, that's a negative experience. When someone else puts you on blast and spreads your business, you humiliate you and others, that's a negative experience. Going public can be a negative experience. But going public doesn't have to be just a negative experience. Going public can also be a positive experience. You see, a long time ago, God decided to go public. God decided to do something about the sin of the world. And one day God went public. He showed up in Jerusalem. One day he decided to go up, go public, and he showed up on a cross publicly and gave his life for the sin of the world. God decided to go public, beloved. And when he went public, they stretched him wide. He hung his head. And he died on the cross for the sin of humanity. He goes public with redemption to make salvation free and public for everybody else. And we're here today because God went public. We're here today because Jesus died for our sin. We're here today. Not because we've lived so well, not because we haven't sinned, not because we don't fall short of God's glory, but because grace woke us up this morning. Grace extended us another chance. Grace blessed us and freed us. And so I offer that grace to you. I'm not offering it right now to those who are unsaved. I'm offering it to those who are saved. I want you to take the grace that saved you and go out and extend that grace to somebody else. It makes no sense for us to be Christians and children of God and we don't carry grace around with us and we go around condemning each other and we go around harboring our anger and holding in our grudges. Take the grace you've been given as a Christian and extend it. And I'm also extending grace to those of you who don't have Christ in your life. Because Christ has come to walk with you. Those of you in the sanctuary, those of you viewing online. He extends grace. I want to do amazing grace. He extends grace to us and frees us to live a brand new life. And you can have that life today. You can join us by going to belonging at ebc3austin.org. You can join us publicly in this sanctuary. We are all recipients of grace. We are all fellow soldiers on this journey of grace. We extend the invitation as our ministers, deacons, and greeters come. The invitation to Christ is extended. Will you stand with me? How sweet the sound. Baptismal certificates for Michaela Alexander, who was baptized in January. And then we also have one for Ronald Angelo Johnson. Come on, baby. Sister Alexander. This certificate certifies that you've been baptized in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit at Ebenezer Third Baptist Church and Ricky Freeman, pastor. Amen? There you go, sweetie. All right. And then, Brother Johnson. To Ronald Angelo Johnson, Jr., baptized the 5th of February, 2023, Ebenezer Third Baptist Church, Ricky Freeman, pastor. All right, young man. Bless you. I think you need to.